to Ticket. I hope you had a fantastic morning, and the keynote was quite exciting last night. And obviously today, I'm going to cover a good bunch of content today, as well as some demos based around the new end-user experience for EmotiFX. Now, I should be saying a good afternoon now as well, I suppose. There's probably lunch that's going to be tempting you soon. I heard that there were some lamb cutlets, so I think they'll be quite nice. So hopefully we'll entertain you enough so you don't walk out too early. But I assume that you have to cross the road to get lunch, so hopefully you'll get some time in line there. So this is a deep dive session regarding the end user experience in EmotiFX for Windows Server 2012. Now, there are other two very relevant sessions that are related to the topics we'll cover today, and those are WCL 202 and WCL 203. Now, both of those are delivered by David Caddick and Rick Mack, and they're both scheduled for tomorrow. So if you see something today that sort of takes your fancy and you want to dive a little bit deeper, tomorrow's sessions are also there for you to go and check out. And they both drill down into VDI and the RD session host scenarios in Windows Server 2012. I'm Carter Borst. I'm a technology strategist at Microsoft New Zealand, based in Wellington, working with public sector customers. And with me, I also have Miguel Rojas. You want to say hi?
Hello. I'm a partner technology advisor, and I look after most of the partners here. So hopefully we'll actually give you a good show.
Cool. That's a very topical session today, because obviously in the early hours of this morning, Windows Server 2012 went to general availability. So some of you may have actually got to see a live stream if you're up at about 2:55 this morning. I heard Miguel was up doing some 360s in his car on the motorway somewhere, so it's good to see that he's all right today. Otherwise, I'll be flying solo. So
scared the hell out of me. It was a
Excellent.
Little bit of rain, so I was just going on this road, took the turn, and all of a sudden I went ee!
I wonder if you'll be the first casualty of Ticket or not.
It
We'll
woke
see.
me up.
You got till Thursday, mate. All right, so let's get started. Today's session objective, well, what we want you to take away today is in Windows Server 2012, EmotiFX provides a simplified way to access IT provision, remote desktop, or remote app resources to the end user. It provides an optimized multi-touch experience. It provides fast and fluid, rich end user experience for remote delivery of the Windows-style UI, Windows 8-style UI. And we also note that it does not require a GPU, hardware GPU or software GPU. So irrespective of your deployment, you can start realizing the capabilities of EmotiFX in your own implementations. So what does that mean? Well, this is a 300-level session, so there's no real architecture here. So this is, I guess, a slide to sort of, get your taste buds going until we see some demos. And actually some diagrams going on here. But for those of you that are familiar with the terminology, EmotiFX in Windows Server 2008 R2, SP1, or EmotiFX means virtual GPU virtualization in VDI scenarios. Now, Windows Server 2012, we actually unify both EmotiFX and RDP into a harmonized experience. So for example, a user can connect from a corporate LAN, which is considered obviously a fast network. Well, now he or she could connect from the internet via a slate-type device using 3G or 4G network connectivity. And you can then connect to an endpoint, which could be a remote desktop session host, which would be a terminal server session, or a remote desktop virtual host delivering a VDI session. And you can get either hardware or software GPU-enabled session that is providing that rich multimedia, is multi-touch enabled, and works over a variety of network conditions. It also comes with single sign-on and USB remote redirection connectivity. So the first thing I want to talk about today is remote app and remote desktops. And we'll have a look about exactly what's new, and then we'll dive into a little demo that Miguel's going to do around that first experience being as an end user. And you might have seen this yesterday at the keynote, a little snippet of that, where they used that great Qualcomm RT Slate device, and actually were able, being a Slate device, could be part of that consumer person bringing that into the enterprise and then wanting to get access to those remote applications. And they can actually use their email address rather than having to have IT send them a URL or an IP address to actually access that feed. So remote apps and desktops are IT provision resources for corporate end users. Now, first we made a simplified way to access remote desktop applications. In Windows Server 2012, we've actually provided a Windows 8-style UI remote desktop application client that you can easily download from the Windows Store for free. What's great about this is that we've made it easy so that as an end user, all you have to do is enter your corporate email address. So when that user enters the address, the IT provision remote application or remote desktop resources will be delivered straight to that end user's desktop. So this results in being fully integrated into the Windows 8 style UI experience, just like the start screen. And we'll see that in a demo soon. Now, we also enable full single sign-on so that a user connects to the resources, there's no credential prompt that would ask for the username and password. So if the user disconnects from the corporate network and then reconnects, for example, from home using that same device, we enable that full auto-reconnect experience. So with that, I'd just like to dive into a quick demo that hopefully will illustrate the concepts that I've just sort of covered now.
Let's see if I can actually drive this complicated machine here. Probably better than my car. Wow, it worked. So what we have here is the remote desktop new Windows UI application, which is you can get it from the Microsoft Store. And what am I going to do here is I'm going to type my email address. And hopefully, if the demo gods are with me, we're going to see the ability to go and understand or do what we used to use on auto-discovery on electronic mail, on email that has been there forever. So let me actually try to type my email address. And what it's done is actually it's gone into DNS and actually identified that there is a machine that has got resources that can actually feed into this remote desktop application. So we got a question here. It uses a special type of record, underscore MSR something or another. I can't remember off the top of my on my head, but I can actually come and see you and show you actually how to do it. It's very simple. It's just a TXT entry into that specific other TXT record. And what we're going to do now is I'm going to request that actually sends me the resources. So it's going to look into it, and it's asking for my credentials. So this is the only time that you actually will have to put a credentials, because once you actually have all the security, all the right certificates into the connection broker and also into the web access machine, you will be able to enable also single sign-on. So let me try that.
So what Miguel's actually using here is my computer. You can see he's asking my smart card credentials up there, so I could obviously use that. But the one you saw yesterday being that Qualcomm RT device, that thing that's not obviously joined to the main, but you can actually use this as your email subscription feed to get access to those corporate resources that you want to enable your users to have.
In this example, we can actually see I don't have any applications that have been given to me or any desktops. But if I actually had the administrator actually give me some published applications or some desktops that have been published to me, they actually will show there, and they will also be populated in the remote desktop new Windows UI application, and also they can actually be populated into my menu here. So they will actually go to the end here. This is actually really good when you are using a machine that is not joining to the domain. And just by using this new remote desktop UI application, you can actually populate and use your line of business application. So if you actually think of the new RT devices, for example, that do not run I386 applications, this is a good way to actually give those line of business applications to those Windows RT devices. Back to you.
Thank you. So, you know, looking back on that, just as a really simple feature, but in terms of how far we've come, and the fact that obviously enabling that kind of experience for that end user. So that person having a consumer device brings it into the IT corporate environment and then wants to still access those applications, just whacking in an email address and a client that's easily to use in terms of multi-touch with the virtual keyboard or that whole no compromise experience by having just putting in a dock and then being able to just use it just as a PC. And then going back home and then say having a profile separate for their kid that they could use, and then obviously that separates that kind of environment between work and home. So it's obviously a good experience. All right. Thanks, Miguel. Now, I want to touch now on the multi-touch and graphics experience in RemoteFX, Remote Desktop and Windows Server 2012. And one of the key investments apparent in Windows 8, obviously, is the Windows 8 UI. And it's obviously a full touch-friendly, fast, fluid experience. And many of you are probably using that now on some of your own touch devices. So really what that translates to when using remote desktops is that, well, A, we provided a Windows-style UI remote desktop application, and everything is touch-friendly UI. It's easy to enter your credentials, and the corporate resources you want to connect to are then presented as tiles on that screen. So we've also provided extra features because, you know, we know a lot of the time, although you have the Windows 8 style UI RDP client, the resources that you are using in remote applications that you commonly connect to are desktop legacy applications, which aren't often designed as being touch friendly. So what we did with this is that we've created a touch pointer, for example, which will actually turn your slate machine into a touchpad, so that when you move your finger, we emulate a mouse pointer so that when you control the application easier with better precision. And you'll hopefully see it again in a demo shortly. Now, I mentioned that the whole experience is a touch-friendly one, which means we actually support full touch as well as gesture remotely across between the client and the remote endpoint. And one of the things in Windows 8 is that the Windows 8 style UI is created to be fast, fluid, and multimedia content rich. So that means that we need to enable that experience remotely over a variety of network connectivity situations. So with that, we've actually provided this graphics remote delivery stack called Adaptive Graphics. And what that does is it actually adapts to different content delivered to the screen. And that means we provide an alternative codec so that it can be delivered remotely and more efficiently over a variety of network conditions, depending on that scenario. So let's take a little bit of a look at how this could be illustrated. So typically on the remote desktop, you can have different types of applications running. So it could be a Windows 8 style UI application, Silverlight, HTML5, or another application. Now this represents the number of application types that could be delivered to remote users remotely. Now underneath that, the desktop is rendered, and so we basically see that desktop as a bitmap. So what we do here with Adaptive Graphics is we actually investigate the desktop to identify which portion of the screen has already been previously delivered to the client. So for example, say you scroll down on the desktop. The screen content should be cached, and therefore, you shouldn't have to resend that same content. Now however, if you have a new fresh screen that you've just loaded, it's been rendered, then we utilize a different codec. So we basically classify the screen into different content and apply different codec techniques to that screen, and then encode that when it's then sent over the WAN transport. And I'll drill down into this a little bit further later on in the slides. But in the WAN, you know, we determined whether to send via TCP for the, or for the WAN condition, we send over UDP, as that we can then efficiently send that content to the client side. So what you're looking at here is probably, you know, an example of a typical website that you may see on your screen. Now, when we get a desktop like this, first we have to classify which area is text. So you can roughly see the areas we can classify as text. Now, the reason that they're not precise is due to the layer being in bitmap form. So this means that there's a level of reverse engineering required to distinguish which portion of the screen is text versus which is image. So an example here would be possibly where a border is categorized as an image next to a section of text. But really, largely the point here is that the key areas that are being identified as text are categorized appropriately. So if we step to the next part, obviously the rest of the region is primarily classified as image, and therefore we associate those with being image areas. Now, if you can imagine that the ad up there is actually animated. So we actually classify that into the video and animation category. There we go. So this is where it's been identified that a heavy amount of bitmap transformation is occurring in this area on the screen. Now, once we classify these areas, we need to use different codecs to next for the text, the image, or for the video, and then encode that screen content for delivery to the client side. Now, the main part around this adaptive graphics is for images. Now, one of the things we identified between Windows Server 2008 R2 and Windows Server 2012 is that over a WAN, where you have conditions where you may have limited bandwidth, but you still want to have a good experience with it. So one of the techniques we apply is called progressive rendering. Now, you may be familiar with this concept when, you know, using a movie streaming service yourself, like QuickFlix, for example. So as your network condition changes, you'll see the stream degrade and increase in quality depending on the situation. And once that traffic is stable, then it will settle down to a comfortable viewing experience. Now, this is a similar technique that what we're using is called progressive image encoding. Now, the user will go through the experience where in the beginning, the image may appear blurred, but they sort of roughly know what that is on the screen, until progressively they see greater image quality until that view is finally clear and crisp, moving from left to right on the screen there. So the difference between streaming video versus a website is that you typically have a lot more text when viewing a web page. And that's quite important because obviously being productive usually requires you to read what's on that screen to get your work done. In remote effects and adaptive graphics, well, what this means is that you can't expect that text is sent to the client using the same method as images due to the poor experience for the user when viewing blurred text. I mean, you know, I'm sure many of you might struggle to see blurred text or, you know, trying to focus or distinguish what's on that screen if that text is blurred. So the point here is that originally the image quality may be degraded and gradually improved, but the text is always delivered clear and crisp throughout the whole screen. So what I hope to do now is hopefully switch to Miguel in a sec, and he'll obviously show you a little bit of how this might work. Yeah, you see the image and the text up there? Coming.
Maybe it's not the right button. Right. No, that's not the one.
Oh.
Oh, there you go.
There you go.
That's the one. Now, I just want to let you know, I do have a little micro server here with 8 gigs of RAM running all these virtual machines. That's why it took us such a long time to set up. And really, I am having a little bit of problem with this machine, but let's see how we go. What I'm going to do is I've got a tablet here, which is connected to the connection, network connection, and so on. And I'm going to try to actually do the multi-touch demo. We'll see how we go, because this machine is actually running really slow. So let's actually connect into it. Now, I believe that's an IP address. I could be wrong. Why don't we just carry on while I actually try to fix this thing, and I'll show you the demo afterwards.
All right. At least you had fun last night spinning around in circles, Miguel. So. All right. But I think you get a little bit of the picture in terms of what we've done there with the adaptive graphics now and actually classifying areas of screen content to optimize that delivery. So let's sort of talk architecturally about how this works over WAN. So how many of you are familiar with RDP Windows 7 and Windows Server 2008 R2, SP1? No. Good, yep, this is pretty why you're here. So what we've heard from the product team is that they've done a lot of work, they did a lot of work with Windows Server 2008 R2, delivering RDP, and it's perceived as working pretty well over LAN, or high-speed networks. However, there's been quite a lot of feedback coming through to them that RDP can perform quite poorly over a WAN. So Windows Server 2012, this is one of the big investment areas in terms of making sure that the RDP, AKA, or RemoteFX, performs great over a variety of those conditions. Because as we say, we've got Windows 8 launched. On the back end, we want Windows Server 2012 to obviously accommodate those great capabilities that it's obviously pushing out to the end user. In a virtual sense. So what are the factors that make RDP delivery over WAN challenging? Well, there are three, really. So the first is latency. Now this means obviously the end-to-end delay between the user's client machine and the endpoint VM, or terminal services session. So for example, 200 milliseconds is not uncommon in a high latency environment. Secondly, we have packet loss. So the obvious form of this is in a wireless environment. It's Wi-Fi where you've experienced, you know, a random or a burst of network loss, and that creates issues when you're in a remote delivery scenario. And the last, obviously, is the size of the pipe. So if you're on a corporate network, for example, it could be over 100 megabit per second, and however, on broadband, it could be less than 2. So a challenge here is to obviously ensure that the entire remote experience works well over all type of network conditions. Not just one, but obviously many networks displaying these types of characteristics. Now earlier we talked about adaptive graphics. Now what we're doing in Windows Server 2012 is combining the techniques we've applied to the codec to desktop over the intelligent transport, the WAN. So first, we automatically detect whether we should send the traffic over UDP or TCP. That depends on the connectivity between the endpoint to the session the user is connecting to. Secondly, we dynamically detect the network conditions at the beginning and during the session end-to-end connectivity while you're in that remote session. Now finally, we understand that often users are connecting through the internet. So we need to ensure that choosing TCP or UDP, that UDP traffic goes through the remote desktop gateway. So our goal is basically here that we want to provide a great user experience over that wide variety of network. So whether you're on a corporate network, for example, a branch office, wireless devices, or those roaming users being on 3G, 4G, they want to be confident that everything works as expected, obviously for them as an end user, and for yourself in IT provisioning that. Now, one of the key challenges that you think about in remote desktop delivery is optimizing the most graphics intensive aspect of the delivery. So this is when you have media content, right? So video or animation or heavy applications. In Windows Server 2008 R2, we provide a high-level Windows Media Player, or the WMV format, remoting. Now that works well when you use Windows Media Player. But obviously you have a lot of different media formats present in your organization, such as Flash or Silverlight or HTML5. And this often did not deliver a great user experience when this media was present. So in Windows Server 2012, we've actually incorporated a feature called server-side video detection. And now this is where specific areas of the screen are detected as being video. And once these portions are identified, the video area is actually encoded in H.264 video codec. Now what we actually get here is up to a 90% drop in bandwidth consumption. Now, hopefully, you'll be able to see this in a demo soon as well.
Yes, we will.
But audio is also another area we wanted to improve, because usually video comes with audio. Now, we've introduced a new dynamic bitrate codec as well. And along with those video improvements, we've actually also better provided video and audio synchronization even across the WAN. So actually, in essence, we actually improved the WAN experience through optimization of multimedia-rich content. And as I say, that 90% bandwidth consumption drop is quite compelling there. So, you know, here's a screenshot of where we're at with RDP8, or Remote FX for Windows Server 2012. That's been highlighted in the middle there. Now, on the left is RDP7. And this is actually using a medium workload with Flash content as a benchmark. And happy to talk about this later on as well if you want some more detail. Now, RDP8 actually has some significant improvements in terms of bandwidth consumption in comparison to RDP7. And it's now very comparable when alongside other industry remote protocols that have been published. So, Miguel, it's probably a good time if you have the opportunity to sort of show this level of performance and how that translates in a demo.
Right, let's actually try to drive this thing again. One, mix, force, no. Here we go. So what I have here, for some reason I don't see my screen here. What I have here is a couple of machines, one that is actually running Windows 7, the other one is running Windows 8. And what I'm going to do is I'm going to start a video. So Kyle mentioned that it was up to 90% of difference when you're actually running. This is purely RDP. There is no remote FX in here. It's purely RDP. How many of you have actually had problems with latency and packet drops and jitter, especially when you're actually running on 3G? So What Carl was referring to, and what we're going to see later on, I do have a WAN emulator running there as well. But what I'm going to show you right now is I'm going to show you how much network consumption is when you're actually running video over RDP. So I do have one client there, which is running Windows 8, and I connected remotely. So I do have two RDP sessions, right? One to Windows 7 to Windows 8. Right now, I don't have any packet lost whatsoever. It's 2 milliseconds, 3 milliseconds to one machine, and the same into the other one. And we're going to actually see when I turn on the Windows emulator how did this actually affect. So I'm just going to start both Windows. And you can see on the right, which is the Windows 8 machine, how RDP8 actually comes and just does render the specific image. Wonder if actually something happened here. No, this is still starting. It's not normally this bad, but we'll see. Thank you. was a stoppage. This machine is really struggling. What we normally see is you know, when I actually see the packet and the information that you're actually using here, normally I actually see about 13 or 14 Mbps. And if I actually stop the Windows 7 video, it drops to about 3 or 4 Mbps, which is actually what you're seeing on the right-hand side. So that's what I actually was trying to show you, but the demo gods are not with me today. So I will actually try to work on this as well and see how we go. Yeah, the other ones are not going to work either.
All right, thanks, Miguel. I mean, at least, you know, just give him a hand, because obviously, you know, this kind of network performance is actually quite considerably quite well in terms of how this might work in your organization and just the advances we've got in this RDP8 client. So, you know, I think it's actually a good thing. So the Remote FX virtual GPU experience. So many people, I think, are familiar with Windows Server 2002 SP1 Remote FX. We saw the show of hands before, and then some of the challenges that you're having in terms of delivering that experience over things like a WAN scenario there. So Remote FX in SP1 is virtual GPU for VDI, but it's also a screen codec that enables bitmap encoding. Now, in Remote FX vGPU for Windows Server 2012, first we moved from virtual GPU from DirectX 9 implementation to DirectX 11 implementation. So what that means is that it provides the best experience for 3D intensive graphics applications. So for example, obviously gaming will come to mind, but then obviously those other resource-heavy 3D engineering, drawing or editing applications, CAD for example. Also, DirectX 11 enables some of the applications that use GPU for computational purposes. So those applications using compute shader features, for example, can now run using a virtual GPU. Some of the key feedback we also got in SP1 was the resolution support. So we've increased that resolution support from the previous 1920 by 1200 to now allowing resolutions of up to 2560 by 1440. And we've also increased the multi-monitor support as well, so from 4 originally to now supporting up to 8. Now, the little caveat around that, supporting up to 8, is obviously we require DirectX 11 as the GPU on that host.
So let me show this demo. I got it up and running now. If I can actually go here. Right. Works on one, doesn't work on the other. Okay. So here I actually got the Windows 7 and Windows 8, right? So I'm going to start to get them both running. And let's actually have a look at the... So we're actually going to go up to about 14, 15, and if I actually just stop one of them, which will be the Windows 7, you will see a drop on the amount of bandwidth that is actually needed to about 2.6 to 4, and it's actually an average of about 3%, right? I'll let you carry on talking about while I'm actually start the area network emulator, and we'll show you the next demo, which is actually on relation to how the jitter, the packet lost, and also the latency actually affects both Windows 7 and Windows 8.
Great. Now, I went and saw a Link demo, a Link session earlier this morning. Poor Dolly ran. It was a demo palooza, so that sort of got me going. That's always good to see. But obviously, Microsoft Link, using that in a VDI scenario, well, there's been a lot of feedback. Having the implementation of Link over VDI isn't a usable experience. So we want to take a look at why this was a challenge and how Link 2013 enables full AV support to overcome these inherent challenges there. So for example, you've got two VDI sessions, user one, user two, that connected to the data center at the back end. Now, when user one wants to initiate a Link conversation with user two, well, what happens is obviously, first of all, the Link client is run in the data center in that VDI session. So the Link application IAM control gets sent to the data center then. Now, when a user adds audio-video conferencing, that audio-video traffic gets sent from the local computer and is uploaded to the data center. Now, the audio-video traffic is sent back down to the user's desktop. Now, what that results in is typically a poor experience because there's a high volume of traffic being sent to the data center and across back to the associated clients. Now, this is why it's been documented, obviously, even that there's limited support for Link in VDI scenarios. So this feedback has actually been taken on board, not just in the remote FX team and the VDI Windows Server 2012 team, but also the Link team too. So they worked together, which has obviously resulted in a better method in delivering this capability using Link 2013 and Windows Server 2012. So in Link 2013 and Windows Server 2012, when user one wants to initiate a call to user two, this time the Link users establish a direct peer-to-peer connection between them. So as a result, you get a far better experience resembling a local client deployment. Now when user one wants to talk to user two. So there's now improved service scalability there too, as now data is no longer sent to the data center and back to the client endpoints.
That piece of code that it was created by the Link team is actually called Link VDI plugin, and unfortunately we cannot show it to you today. I've seen it working, and the demo was extremely powerful. How many of you have tried to do Link over VDI? What's your experience been? Right, so that type of feedback we actually heard really, really hard and clear, and that's why the whole Link VDI plugin was actually generated or created. And what it is actually a client-less plugin that it does take advantage of your own resources and makes a direct connection into the other host in that case. So what I'm going to do now, before you actually carry on, is I'm going to swap you back here. And I turn on the emulator with 250 milliseconds, 2.5% packet lost, and 10 milliseconds of jitter. So let's take a look at the same video and how it actually affects the RDP sessions. So as you can see, we actually have a 250 milliseconds of latency there. And this is just done by a water network emulator. So let me now take these two. And let's actually have a look at how they will actually play this same the same videos over the water network. with those characteristics. So as you can see, the Windows 7 is actually very patchy, right? And we actually have the Windows 8 RDP actually working really, really well. You are actually add audio into it, and you'll hear the Windows 7 one actually a little bit patchy as well, and the Windows 8 is actually very much working. This is just nothing else than RDP, right? Let's actually stop this, and let's look at a different type of document. Let's open a PDF file.
So obviously you can even see that, you know, when he's clicking on a button, he's not really getting any feedback from the client end in terms of being able to switch applications and stuff too, which is quite a poor experience.
I should have actually started these applications, but you're going to see there is a you know, one of my favorite cars, one that I hopefully will own one day. There is a couple of Porsches here. What I will do, I'm trying to force the Windows 7 to go home so I can actually start to scroll down and so it is actually non-responsive, right? So if you actually look at, put this into consideration of what you're experiencing out there right now with 250 milliseconds, right, of packet, 200 milliseconds latency, it is quite annoying, isn't it? When you actually try to get something done as an end user experience, right? If we actually try to do the same scrolling on Windows 8, you can actually see the response is actually much better. Back to you.
Cool. That Porsche there, I don't know. I think his insurance premium might go up after last night, Miguel, so it might be a little while left before you get that.
Thanks, Carl.
Yeah, or he doesn't tell them, yeah, but I'm used to dobbing people in, right? The last topic we'll sort of touch on is USB redirection. And some of you may already be familiar with this in the earlier implementation, but in Windows Server 2008 R2 SP1, we enabled USB support that was specifically tailored to VDI and virtual GPU deployments. Now, Windows Server 2012, we've actually enabled USB across all scenarios. So this is regardless of whether you're running a physical remote desktop, a VDI session, or a terminal session. Also, regardless of whether or not you're using software GPU or hardware GPU, you'll be able to have USB remote redirection support enabled. So what we're also able to provide for the terminal session scenarios, you know, is that you can actually isolate devices. So users one USB device will not see users two USB device using that same terminal server. So this isolation context is obviously also available for devices. See up there, it's not uncommon to see, obviously, that we support a wide range of USB devices, but also including those isochronous devices such as USB cameras, for example. And I've even seen, you know, people demo this using the remote missile launcher device being run out of the data center and actually launching missiles into the crowd, which would be quite cool if we could show you today.
Unfortunately, I couldn't find one big enough.
Yeah. So, I guess with that, actually, we want to see if Miguel can actually take us through how that's enabled and handled in remote effects, or at least talk about it.
Yeah, let's see if I can actually remember which one this other machine is in. Maybe four? No. Ah, there you go. My little machine here actually doesn't have the ability to do. All right, so I'm okay. My little machine here, it doesn't have, this is only a micro server, right? So this is my lab machine that I actually run at home. And it's not powerful, it doesn't have the correct CPU. So I actually have to get the guys from DTSL to actually build something for me this morning so I can actually show how it actually looks like. So let me actually log in here. What you actually need to get this type of support is you actually need SLIT. So the CPU has to actually support SLIT. And if it's Intel or AMD, you actually need a specific type of component that is NPL or EPL to actually have the support to support remote effects. You don't need a GPU anymore, a graphical interface that actually to enable remote effects. You can actually use the virtual, the DGP GPU, but you actually need on the CPU the ability to actually have one of those two things. Now, most of the new servers do actually already have that in place. So let's actually look at this specific particular machine, which actually I have it off. And as you can see, if you don't have the correct control, that particular remote FX 3D video adapter on the virtual machine is gray touch. And that's exactly how I can actually see it on my little machine. In this other one, if I actually go and create a new machine, so let's actually just go. New virtual machine. Doesn't matter. When I actually go and look at the settings, now I will be able to actually see and install. Oops, I don't want to delete this. The remote effects adapter that is actually enabled. There are a couple of ways of actually doing this. We did the harder one today, which is actually just enabling, but you're doing RDS into the same machine and forcing it. But there are actually much easier ways to do it. There will be a white paper on TechEd on a step by step, the same way that we actually have one for Windows 8 R2. Will be a one for 2012 soon, now that we are actually released on Windows Server, on how to do this particular component. And you can just as easy as adding, you select the type of monitor resolution and the number of monitors that you actually want to have up to 8. Apply, and that machine is actually ready to create the remote FX experience. Remote effects is really not something that you can do or demo very, very easily, the remote effects component. To get the USB redirection, you actually need the remote effects adapter to be enabled. Something that I still quite don't understand why, but you actually have to have it enabled. And then you will be able to. What it does is when you actually RDP into the machine, it gives you a little computer on the RDP session that you can actually go and enable and the plugged-in type of devices that you actually have, and you can dynamically enable or disable or put them on and off those devices, and that will actually give you the ability to actually access those devices. I wanted to do that with the link plugin demo, but because I can't show you that, I have to actually pull that. That's actually requires also Exchange 2013 to be able to use the Link VDI plugin. That's me.
Cool. Thanks, Miguel. But You've seen quite a few extra capabilities and new features in Windows Server 2012, specifically for remote effects and VDI and terminal session deployments that you could definitely leverage or put into your roadmap in terms of where you're going. With the last few minutes we've got, I think it's just a good time to sort of recap the topics we took you through today and how this linked to the objectives we mapped out in the session. You know, Microsoft's made a tremendous amount of improvements in both RDP as well as the overall remote effects experience for end users. So obviously, so that they get that simplified method of accessing remote app or remote desktops, they'll get a full touch optimized experience, and obviously with that, whether you have software GPU or hardware GPU, you can get that deployment irrespective of the environment to live that experience that you're looking for. I touched on in the beginning a little bit on related content. So tomorrow, you might want to put those in your calendar, WCL 202 and WCL 203. Yeah, exactly, both tomorrow. They really dive a little bit deeper into the RD session host and VDI, and obviously thin client deployments, as many of your large organizations are probably looking to do in some time. We also offer this week an exam for 2008 R2 server virtualization. They'll sort of, you know, make sure and test how you're doing, what you've already learned so far. And then we've just left our contact details there in case you want to reach out or actually see more demonstration of this. A quick plug for the other resources available to you, depending on the profession that you want to look for. There's the public links there. Obviously, having Windows Server 2012 on GA launched this morning is fantastic news. And obviously, being 2012, the year of 2012, kicking off a big year for Microsoft product launches. Also, lastly, obviously, the reminder, you want to obviously win some great prizes, and I've seen the tweet feed going pretty chaotic in the last day or two. So, you know, fantastic for you if you want to. We really appreciate having some feedback. This obviously decides what we put in future tech eds and where people's focus really is around, if they want to go deeper or they want to see just introductory high-level stuff. So now I suggest you'll probably go out and grab some food, get those lamb cutlets out of the way, and enjoy the rest of TechEd.
Thank you.